We've been talking about the novel coronavirus for so long, I just wonder when the movie's going to come out. Welcome to The Crunch, the only podcast that Ascension Press is scared of. It's your boy, Ethan.
And I'm Patrick.
There we go. We can stick with that.
One's good.
We can do that. how you doing? I feel like you're about to ask me if I want some jalapeno poppers.
Listen, okay, I don't look that much like a Chili's waiter in this tie.
It's not the tie. It's just the shirt is very red. It's a very,
very
deep.
Red.
It's like watching a film that was recorded in Technicolor, baby. Like, those
it
reds
very...
are... popping off the screen.
It's as red as my phone. My phone is very red.
Is this Schindler's List? Because all I see is the red jacket? No.
Got it?
That's different.
I haven't seen that movie.
You haven't seen? There's the only color in the movie is the red jacket.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Anyway.
I feel like I knew that.
Yeah. Patrick looks like a Chili's waiter right now, and that's the bit. And you can't see it.
So picture a Chili's waiter, and that's what I look like. Do Chili's waiters wear red?
They probably wear black. Most servers wear black.
Yeah, I think they wear black.
So that nobody knows how dirty they are.
Honestly, though. They wear black polos that say Chili's on them.
When you worked at Bob Evans, did you have to wear a straw hat and overalls?
No, we had to wear black t-shirts and blue jeans.
Really? That doesn't seem to fit with the farm fresh fun vibe.
Well, you got to wear black in case you get something on your shirt. You're cracking open a nice. Okay.
It's a truly.
Nice. Just you gotta wear black so no one notices if you get some schmutz on your shirt.
Some what now?
And then
you've been
saying a lot of
Yiddish words on this podcast.
A lot of Yiddish
podcast.
Phrases. I'm Yiddish, you know. I'm not fully Yiddish. And you had to wear blue jeans to fit with the aesthetic. But I had one manager who was very, very strict about we couldn't wear jackets.
What if it was cold?
Yeah, I know. And so I got very chilly when I worked at
Bob
Evans.
How much could you have worn an Under Armour kind of
piece? I think that was allowed.
Yeah.
But like the problem was eventually you got hot. And so I just had to like walk really fast around
them. That's true. Do laps.
Or like stand near the grill, you know.
They had actual grills at the Bob Evans.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's where we cook our pancakes and our world-famous Farmer's Choice breakfast.
For restaurants like that, I just assume that the kitchen is just a row of microwaves and that there's no cooking surfaces.
No, everything's farm fresh.
Sure.
No, pretty much every vegetable is cut like either the night before or the morning of. All the vegetables, like nothing really came in bags. All of the eggs were cracked fresh and... all that stuff. I mean, like, they were cracked into a bucket and then scooped, like, later. You know, that's what they would do. They would crack, like, a dozen, 18 eggs at the same time and put them in a bucket.
Uh-huh.
And then...
Did that bucket go in the fridge? Did they put it outside? Where did the bucket go?
So they have these little cold rails that are, like, it's ice on the inside. Uh-huh. And then you just put the bucket in the cold water. It's like how they have, you know, how catering companies have, like... trays of water and you heat the water and you put the food in the hot water so that it stays warm.
Yes.
So you do that with cold water.
Mm.
And that's how you keep cold things cold and hot things hot. And they would keep that scrambled egg mixture there to make French toast super quickly. That's what they would do.
Oh, that makes sense. I was thinking this is for like scrambled eggs.
Well, I think they used it for scrambled eggs.
They used
eggs
the same eggs for scrambled eggs that they use for French toast. They were just scooping out of the same trough.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
I want my scrambled eggs hatched differently. I don't know.
Completely different.
What if you say, here's what you say. You say that they put in the hot water the food to keep it warm. I've always put food in the hot water to cook it. And so I'm wondering, where do you draw the line? At what point are you cooking pasta, and at what point are you saying, hey, you look a little chilly? Let me warm you up.
Well, you don't put it in the hot water at a temperature. The hot water is like 180 degrees. It's not like hot enough to cook something.
I feel like I would cook in a 180 degree.
Yes, you would.
I'm a sensitive. I have sensitive skin, and so that's the problem.
The worst thing about the hot water rails, you just called it hot rail and cold rail. That's what we would call it. Mm-hmm. I don't know why it's a rail. But anyway, the problem was you would have, in the morning, they would dump water in this trough, and then you would turn the temperature on. Yeah, and the water would sit there pretty much all day. It wouldn't touch the food. It's just purely for temperature purposes, but it gets gross.
Well, yeah.
It's gross because stuff falls in there.
Ugh.
So we would have to clean. And yeah, this is gross.
This
but
is
it,
gross.
At the, I was
inside,
always.
This, we're changing this podcast into an expose on Bob Evans.
It's not unsanitary because that stuff doesn't touch your food.
Yeah.
It's like the dish sits in
yeah.
another dish of hot water.
Sure.
But the problem is there's no drain on the bottom of it.
You'd think that'd
so
be
you
wise.
You can't drain. I know. And so every day I had to take one of those quart buckets of that you use for soup. I had to take a to-go cup for soup and scoop water out of the hot rail. Yeah. Every night.
Yeah.
And
can't you just
I was
tilt
like,
it?
There's
like, is it attached?
You can't lift it out. It's oh. it's like it's cement. It's like part of the counter.
Oh.
You can't take it out.
Okay.
Yeah. So you couldn't like dump it anywhere. That sucked. I didn't like that.
Yeah, that's. I'm really glad you got out of that gig.
Yeah, it wasn't very bad.
They were holding me down.
That's one of the weird things about serving is that, especially at these fast order restaurants that are like, every like waiter has another job as well. So you have like an out, as they call it. So it's what you do before you're allowed to leave.
Mm.
And so if they say, "Hey, you're cut." You go, okay, cool. I'm not going to take any more tables. I just have to do my outs. And so during downtime, you do them so that you keep working.
Right.
But we were always understaffed. And so everyone always had more outs than they should have had. And sometimes we even had to like sub for people who weren't there. Like there's a position called kitchen prep where you prep all the vegetables and the salads and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we had to do that ourselves. Sometimes when I was waiting too long, I would just go back there and I'd just do it myself and be like, "You guys took too long," and I'd clear the order and I'd go.
Wow.
It was a power move.
Robert Evans, if you're listening, Patrick Nevy is for hire.
You gotta tell the Bob Evans in Weirton, West Virginia to step their game up.
You worked in West Virginia?
Yeah, it's the panhandle's right next to Steubenville.
It's crazy how close everything is over there. There's like four states
you're
within
right.
walking
it
distance.
It is weird.
Yeah, I don't think
it
about
is
that.
Weird.
In my mind, Ohio's Ohio, and then you drive like 400 miles, and then you get to Pennsylvania, and then you drive 400 miles, and then you're in West Virginia. Because I'm from the plains, and everything is far away.
No, when I leave school on a Wednesday night, I leave Steubenville. Mm-hmm. Within 5 minutes, I'm in West Virginia, and 5 minutes after that, I'm in Pennsylvania.
That's odd. Why wouldn't they just make it a different state at that point?
I mean, wait, no, they are making it. You mean the same state?
Yeah. Like, why not just
It's all pretty much the same state. What's really frustrating...
I'm thinking a country of concentric circles. We could call them...
There's the problem.
We could call them districts, and each one could have different kind of exports, you know, that they're responsible for. And then
the Hunger Games concentric circles?
The higher the number, the poorer the people are. And that's just kind of, and then you're only going to get to know people really from one district. You're going to know, not going to know anything about the rest of them, but you're going to be forced to care about them for the entirety of the story. I think it was concentric circles because I think Denver was in the middle. I think Denver was supposed to be the capital. And then it was like.
No, I'm pretty sure I saw a map. That
oh,
was
really?
Like, yeah, that was a Hunger Games map. I don't think Suzanne Collins made.
I don't think it was ever clearly defined, which is why I think it's bad literature.
Well,
let's think about Tolkien. The first thing you see in that freaking book, what is it? A detailed map of where everything is. Who drew it? The author. Who keyed it? The author. Who drew in the little mountains? The author. Come on.
So District 13, according to this map that I found on Google, District 12 is in the wilderness on like the Appalachian. So District 12 is the Appalachian Mountains. Okay.
So that's the furthest out circle.
So that's kind of classist. No, it's not. It's not circles.
Oh, it's not circles?
There's random districts, yes. And the capital is in Las Vegas.
Really?
And District 1 is in the mountains, yeah. And everything kind of on the border is underwater. Mm. So like Florida's underwater. Most of Texas is underwater. California's underwater.
So is this in like the future then?
This is in the very future, yes.
Oh.
Speaking of...
I thought it was a historical
The Hunger
fiction.
Games.
So, yes, go ahead.
Speaking of the Hunger Games, so on Monday I went to like a little writers group.
Oh,
yeah, like a Catholic authors in Pittsburgh group.
Really?
It was cool. I met a bunch of cool people. Yeah, They're fun. A couple people who had listened to the Crunch before, hey. Someone made fun of the Crunch, and so I decided to never talk to him again.
That just sounds like an average meetup of people.
Yeah, uh-huh. So some people knew who we were, one person, and then
some people knew who we were. A lot of people didn't know who we were, but everybody knew enough to make fun of us. That's kind of just the average meeting. Yeah,
precisely. And so someone gave a, they presented an essay, which is what you do when you get together with a bunch of smart
nerds.
People. Someone presents it. I know. And so he presented this essay, and it wasn't about revolutions. On my recent blog post, I did a post about revolutions.
Oh, that's why that person said that on the Facebook page. I didn't know where that was coming from.
Like, that was the title of my blog. But we weren't talking about revolutions. His essay was about the understanding of history and, the apocalypse. So his essay was about the apocalypse. And so people were talking about the apocalypse, and he was talking about apocalyptic literature. And one of the kids there was like a little younger than me. So his dad came and he brought his son. And his son's an aspiring writer. He's graduating high school.
Is he? Okay.
He was the youngest kid there.
Gotcha.
And he had read The Hunger Games. And so I pointed out, you know, I was in fourth grade when The Hunger Games came out. So like,
were
you?
You
were a kid. Yeah, we were.
Oh.
The Hunger Games is an old book.
Yeah,
and
strange.
he was in fourth grade when the movies were coming out. So he read the books and watched the movies. And so we talked about The Hunger Games a little bit, and one of the guys that was there was like, can we please stop talking about these books? They aren't even literature. And I'm like, yeah, obviously, but they're important, so we should talk about them. They're important because they're culturally significant, and the point of the essay was, why are these books so popular? And he was talking about the difference between Divergent and The Hunger Games, and I said, look, I get them confused so often.
Yes.
I always forget which one is which.
Yeah. Divergent, what I remember most...
The main characters are identical to me.
They really are. They're about the same. The thing I remember most about the Divergent books is that I was bored the whole time.
I'm not like most girls.
Yeah.
I have multiple personality traits.
I'm not like most girls. I like two guys and not just one.
Listen, my high school career will tell us that is usually the case. Phoebe and I watched the Divergent series. Her family likes the series, and so we watched it during quarantine. And I was like, "This is just if Myers-Briggs became the government. That's all this is." You know?
Yes, it's exactly what people. This is I heard somewhere a long time ago about girls, and it might have just been a tweet. I make it sound like it was something that somebody said to me, but it's like girls just love it when you describe themselves to them. And that's what they like. And they say
people like this.
People like this. Girls especially like this.
Okay.
You know? Cuz it's like if you just say, "Oh, you're the kind of person that is extroverted in these situations but introverted in these situations," the girl is like, "No way. That is so right.
How did you know?
How
that's
did you
so
know?
Me.
That's crazy."
Yeah.
And so when you read Divergent and they're like, "Oh my gosh, I'm a total abnegation." And then it sells 100 million copies.
Yeah.
And that's social science, baby. That's sociology in a book.
Myers-Briggs is so popular because it tells people in every no matter what results you get, it tells you you're quiet around people you don't know and you're louder around people you do. And they're like, "Oh my gosh,
God,
how did you
crazy.
Know? That's crazy."
I got my personality test back and it says that I love the things that I'm passionate about. Oh my
gosh. And
then
200 years later, someone writes a musical about your life. This is P.T. Barnum. P.T. Barnum did this. Like, this is how he made his money.
Wait, really?
Yeah, by
telling
people.
He sold fake personality tests?
No, it's something called a Barnum statement. It's something that sounds incredibly personal, mm-hmm. but it could be true about anybody.
A Barnum statement?
A Barnum statement.
Like,
it's something.
I love you. You love me. We're a happy family.
That's a Barney
statement. Oh, okay. My bad.
This is like the circus guy, P.T. Barnum.
Okay. P.T. Barney. Can you imagine? Replace
Why don't we read the stars?
What if we change that whole.
Busted that one out real quick. I didn't even know I could do that impression.
The Greatest Showman, but the main character is no longer Hugh Jackman. The main character is our favorite purple dinosaur. That'd be great. I would love that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway.
We don't have a topic for today, but what we're going to...
No, don't tell them that. They'll stop listening.
All right. We have a topic for today, and it's
yeah.
and it's entitled Questions from Our Patrons. And we,
well, first of all, I want to say thank you to our patrons for submitting all these questions. You can support us patreon.com/thecrunch. I do have a few business announcements.
Here we go. Should I put in a bump? Can we have somebody make a bumper, the business bumper?
The business bumper. Yes, the quarterly report, and that's all it is.
it's someone who goes, yes, exactly what I thought.
Davenport. All working hard, hardly working. Back to the old grind, I guess. So we got an audience mail. We got audience mail from our youngest fan. Okay.
Okay. I'm intrigued.
Hello, Patrick. Okay. Send it just to me. Okay. Hello, Patrick. Don't say my name until the end so my sister can guess who I am.
Okay.
I am one of those, how do you say, children who listens to the digital audio file you make available on the internet for downloading to a computer or mobile device.
This kid knows way too many words.
New installments of which can be received by subscribers automatically, otherwise known as a podcast. I am 13 years old.
Wow.
And if I could donate on Patreon, I would. This is how Jake Paul makes his money. Yeah. So I understand. Appealing to children.
You can. Let me tell you this. Let me stop you right there. You can ask for your parents' credit card right now and go to patreon.com.
Yeah. Listen, if you go to patreon.com/thecrunch, you'll get a bunch of V-Bucks.
$5
Doesn't that sound fun?
$10 a month. $20 a month. Nothing is stopping you. Go. Fly like the wind.
Go.
You know where her purse is.
I first listened on the way home from my sister's college. She played Yagaboo Dibbidly Baya Dune. I don't remember what that one was.
It was we were talking about the wild thornberries, and there's the clip of the little guy going, Yagaboo Dibbidly Baya, and he throws a plate and it crashes, and I inserted the audio into the show. It was funny.
Needless to say, I was hooked. I have taken most of my views from this show. Oh, gosh. Sorry.
No comment.
No comment. No. I hope we're right. We've conjectured a lot. I really would like for you to discuss in-depth Ocean's 11 and The Simpsons. Why are you watching Ocean's 11 and The Simpsons? You're 13.
Yeah.
I respect it. Those are some good films.
The Simpsons is
The
not
Simpsons
a film.
Is one long film.
It's a 30-year-long film.
Listen, it's a performance art piece. I would also like it if you discuss how to evangelize other teenagers and tell them how bad social media is and why their parents aren't wrong for having restrictions on them on the internet. You're ahead of your time, my friend.
That's true.
Lastly, in a previous episode, Ethan said every teen that listens to us, the podcast, also watches Jake Paul. This is not true. If I had social media or got social media, I would flame him.
Wow.
Brian.
Thanks, Brian. Thank you for...
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you for being 13, because you're still... 13 years are still the same as I thought they were, which is good because I haven't seen one in a while. And you're
they're the same.
You're doing the
13
same.
13-year-olds are the same,
which is good.
This 13-year-old is obviously doing better because he's listening to our show.
What he didn't say, the subtext in that, is that he watches Logan Paul but not Jake Paul. And so, I would never watch Jake Paul. Gosh, I'm here for mature content.
Yeah, I'm here for Logan. I'm a Maverick for life.
Maverick gang. Hey, is that a taser?
Oh, someone! Red so sus. I saw him standing over the body. What are you, Logan Paul? That's one of the good Among Us jokes that I've seen before.
I don't know anything about Among Us. I see lots of memes about it. I'm glad that people like it. I have no interest in it. I don't know what it is, but it appears to be the next big thing.
It is good. It is basically like the game Mafia.
Okay,
but it's a video game.
Okay, so instead of people playing Mafia together, they play this game.
Yes, exactly. Great. Instead of people playing a card game, they play this.
It's like the game Trouble in Terrorist Town, which was a mod of Counter-Strike like 10 years ago. And they've reskinned it to make it something that 8-year-olds can play, which is great.
Great.
Anyway.
And then someone, Bridget O'Keefe, emailed us and said, thank you for making this really cool podcast.
Wait, are we going to talk about Brian's thing? He has to talk about Ocean's 11.
Oh, he has to talk about Ocean's 11.
Bum,
oh, sure.
Ocean's 11 has the greatest soundtrack, I think, of any movie. I love
it's
that.
It's pretty good. It really did set the standard for heist movie cliches.
I mean, I don't think that that's true, because I think there were lots of heist movies before Ocean's 11.
Nope, it's the most known one, so it is the one that came first.
How about...
Hangover was the first movie to have the idea of hangovers.
Sure.
Yeah.
This is a Strand-type game. It's a video game donkey reference. Anyway, you don't know about him? It's all right.
No.
I think the most known heist movie is a little film. You might have heard of it. Avengers Endgame.
Heist from the past.
Before we start making big proclamations about the most heisty movies, I think Ocean's 11 is great. it's not the original. Are we talking about the Ocean's 11 that came out in the early 2000s or the late 90s? Or are we talking about the original Ocean's 11 that came out in the 60s or the 50s?
We must be talking about the one that came out in the early 2000s.
Yeah, because...
the one with George Clooney.
Yeah, because the older one is what it's based. It's a remake. Everybody knows about the one with George Clooney, but nobody knows about the remake.
Or the pre-make.
1960 film.
Huh.
It has the Rat Pack. Frank Sinatra, Peter Lawford, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., and Joey Bishop.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm sure all of our boomers listening to the podcast.
All the boomers are freaking out. So it's funny because you talk about the Rat Pack, but then after the movie Old School, you had the Frat Pack, which was like Will Ferrell, Vince Vaughn.
Yes.
Those guys. I don't know who else is in that movie, but...
is Ben Stiller in the Frat Pack?
Ben Stiller could be in the Frat Pack.
There's also the Brat Pack, made up of the people that were in Breakfast Club and 16 Candles and Zane Elmo's Fire.
There's also...
the Backpack, and it's me and Ethan. And there's us on a college campus making movies.
There's also the Brats Pack, including your favorite brats, such as Yasmin, Meredith, Chloe, Jade, Sasha...
There's also the Snapback.
I think Ocean's 11 is great. I think it's a great film. I think everybody should watch it. No matter how, that's one of those movies I can watch anytime. I can just sit down and watch it. It's like a comfort film for me.
I see.
Some people have those.
The original one.
No. The 2000.
The remake.
The 2001. Yeah, the remake.
Yeah, that makes sense. I would love to see that. Okay. Have you seen the movie Heist?
I've not seen the movie Heist.
Guess what it's about?
Killing.
It's a heist.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. It's a heist of a guy who doesn't want to do another heist, but he's got to do another heist.
You're talking about that Rick and Morty episode.
No. I'm talking about the movie Heist featuring the guy who was in Walking Dead. The guy who played Negan in Walking Dead.
I don't know.
In this movie.
Oh, I don't know about that. I do.
And he...
go ahead.
He has to get money for his daughter's brain cancer, and so he does a heist and steals from his dad. Mm-hmm. His dad owns a casino, and his dad is also, oh my gosh, what's that guy's name? Al Pacino.
His dad's not Al Pacino.
His dad is Robert De Niro, one of those Italians, one of the guys that was in The Irishman.
Yeah,
and
you're really nailing this synopsis.
Yeah, I know. No, it's a real, I'm sure everybody wants to go see this movie. It's on Netflix. So you can go watch it. But yeah, his dad owns a casino and he steals, and then
it's got Robert De Niro in it.
What did I say?
You said Al Pacino.
Yeah, and then I said Robert De Niro.
Okay,
right later,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you got it.
Al Pacino is not in it.
I do think that the heist episode of the Rick and Morty show, for all of Rick and Morty's failings, is like, so, it's so funny because it just plays.
It is really funny.
It plays on all of the tropes of the heist genre to the point where it's just nonsensical. And so watch it. And if you don't understand it, go watch some heist movies. Heat is a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
The Town. You've got. I mean, there's lots of them. Tower Heist. I think that one actually does have Ben Stiller in it.
Tower Heist, Skyscraper is a heist movie,
yeah.
Sort of.
Oh, Three Kings. It's one with, it has George Clooney in it as well. It's like a Gulf War film.
You know what's an underrated movie genre?
Tell me.
Prison escape films.
Prison escape films. War for the Planet of the Apes.
Is that a prison escape
movie? It actually is. You wouldn't think that it is, but it actually, it kind of.
Really?
Yeah.
So,
the Dirty
prison
Dozen.
Escape movies. Yes. That one, I think this one's just called The Escape Plan.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a movie that like Dwayne The Rock Johnson is in, but he's not like cool. You know, The Escape Plan. It's, yeah. I think it's like, this one has Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And yes, I know the one that you're talking about. It's just called Escape. It's called Escape Plan. Yeah, there it is. Yep.
And another one is... oh my gosh, what's this other one? The Great Escape is a really good movie.
The Great Escape.
If you haven't seen The Great Escape, you need to go watch it. It's Steve McQueen.
That's
not
the one.
Not to be confused with his cousin Lightning. And
that's the one that's spoofed in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. They have Leonardo DiCaprio trying out for the part of Steve McQueen in The Great Escape. And it's like, It's kind of spooky how it, like, they recreated it, you know? Anyway.
Yeah.
There's that one. Escape from Alcatraz. Shawshank Redemption.
Hey, you're just reading them off a list.
I'm not reading them off a list.
Then why is your laptop on and you're looking at it?
Cool Hand Luke. Shutter Island.
Okay. All right. That's a stretch.
I know. I'm sorry. I do like the Escape from Prison.
Do you want to go to listener questions?
No, I mean, I like talking about films. I talk about War for the Planet of the Apes all day long. We don't have.
I did say Bridget's name and then I didn't say.
Yeah, we got it. So we got to go to Bridget. Sorry. First of all, Brian. Last thing, we don't know anything about The Simpsons. It's the wrong podcast. Go to Catching Foxes. All right, carry on.
No, don't. You're 13. Thank you for making a great podcast. What would it take for you to grab some people and make a Catholic D&D podcast?
Oh, money.
Money.
It would have to be worth my time.
I would have to make a bank off of that episode. That, no, I'm just kidding. But
if I'm being honest though, that would be so fun.
It would be really fun. The issue is the time commitment, and also to get a really good DM, neither of us would be able to do it. Like, right. No one, we would not be able to find someone who would do it. We would have to pay someone to DM the podcast.
Unless somebody listening to this is a really good Dungeons and Dragons DM and wants to DM.
If someone here is a really good D&D DM, if someone's a really good DM and wants us to do a D&D podcast and can do like a short. Here's the thing. If we were going to do it, it's not going to be like Adventure Zone. It's not going to be like Critical Role.
Adventure Zone is so good.
It's not going to be like us going on like a multi-week campaign where we do a bunch. It's going to be. It has to be like. We're going to play it out, obviously.
Right.
But it would have to be a mini-series. It would have to be.
Yeah. I think realistically, I probably wouldn't be able to commit to it until after the school year's over, you know?
Yeah. Also, we don't have to do D&D. There are a ton of other RPGs.
But I kind of fell in love with D&D when I listened to The Adventure Zone. Because
it's
standard.
There are people out there who are RPG snobs, and D&D is like Settlers of Catan for people who are like really like board games.
Hey,
you know?
I like Settlers of Catan. Why reinvent the wheel?
I like Settlers of Catan every 2 years. I also like Munchkin every 2 years. I can't do it often.
My good friend Matthew Wells loves Munchkin and always talked about it. Never played it with me because it was always too much work to explain the game, and so we would always play something
else. Oh, it's so much work.
It's
but
very
if you know D&D, it becomes easier.
Really? Okay, that might
help.
Yeah,
you have a class and a race and all that stuff. Yeah.
Let me just roll an insight check. Oh, it looks here. I've decided that we're going to do it at some point.
You, me, and Teresa and
Father
somebody
Anthony.
Else and Father Anthony should all get together and play Munchkin. That's a much, but it would have to be a video. That's the problem. We could do like shots of us and then a shot of the table.
Here's the thing, Patrick. I'm only allowed to have fun if I'm making money off of it. So either we go gambling or we figure out a way to, you know what I mean? For this D&D thing. I'm in.
Okay.
I'm in. I want to do it. I think it's a great idea.
All right. Cool. Do you want to do listener questions?
I would love some listener questions.
So these are some actually like our patrons always, our patrons, patreon.com/thecrunch. Our patrons. Oh, I didn't do my announcements. Dang it. I didn't do the business that I had to.
Replay the bumper.
No. We're going to do it at the end.
Okay.
I'm gonna forget. I know I'm gonna
just
forget. I'm gonna
down.
Do it now. Okay, we have two things. We have two things. We have two things.
All right.
One is the Crunch Store. Go buy things. We have really good merch. We're gonna bring out more merch. We're trying to get hoodies for the Christmas season. We're gonna run some cool products out for the Christmas season. So keep your eyes on that. If you're like, I don't want to buy something, I might want to buy something later, just go on the thing and put your email address in so you get notified when we make new merch. Like, we're going to have mugs and we're going to have hoodies and we have t-shirts and stickers already. And yeah, so we're going to do, well, eventually we'll also make some little packages like, hey, you can get the Crunch Bunch starter pack where you get like a t-shirt and three stickers. It'll be fun. And then another thing is I am repartnering with Catholic Beard Balm for the November.
Oh,
for the Nazarite Challenge, they do a challenge in November. It's basically just, you know, an Advent thing. Prepare for Advent. get ready for Christmas, you know,
hey, Patrick,
spiritual. It's for what?
Where did the Nazarites go when they needed some Tylenol?
Where?
Nazarite Aid.
Sorry. We don't have those in Florida.
We don't.
So,
we don't have them in Kansas either. I just know that it's a brand. All right.
I know that it's a brand. And this year's Nazarite Challenge is focused on brotherhood, and I will be hosting it. So me and Catholic Beard Balm have been putting together some great resources, and we're going to be doing live streams, and it is free. So you should sign up. And if you go to the link in our description and you would like some Catholic Beard Balm stuff, you can go, and it's an affiliate link. So you can go get a discount, and you'll help support the show.
You got to remember to
also,
send that to me so I can put it in the...
Yes, I will. Thank and you. This is something that's more for Ethan and the audience, but I do need to tell you this.
Oh no.
We have so many affiliate links, and I want everyone to know that we have affiliate links, but we can't just plug all of our affiliate links like for Hallow and Catholic Beard Balm and all of our other things. We should just have a page on our website that's just like, "Hey, you want Catholic things? Go to this part of our website
yeah.
and get discounts on it."
So go to thecrunchcast.com/links. And it'll is that a good one? Maybe
I can have that. I can probably not ready by Sunday.
We can have that ready by Sunday. So just go ahead and do that. And if you're listening to this, stop the podcast right now. Go to thecrunchcast.com/links and see if Patrick actually held up to his end of the bargain. If not, you know,
go to thecrunchcast.com/bigmoney, baby, and then.
And if it doesn't show up, if the crunchcast.com/bigmoneybaby doesn't actually bring you to the affiliate links, it means that Patrick is spending too much time counting his produce inventory at the back of the Ruby Tuesdays that he works at. With his
Ethan thinks I look like a manager at a mid-range restaurant. That's what he thinks I look like.
He's a step above fast food, a step below like a real restaurant.
Wow, that's so mean.
I also just cut out like 80% of restaurants. Which I'm fine with.
That's fair.
Great. Is that all the business?
That's all the business. And now let's go to the Patreon questions, patreon.com/thecrunch.
Hey, thank you for listening to this episode of The Crunch. Sorry to interrupt what I'm sure is a stimulating intellectual conversation, but I wanted to pause the episode real quick to let you hear from some of our sponsors. We will be back right after this.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Oh, am I supposed to have them up?
Yeah, you're supposed to have them.
Okay, let me just go over to the page real quick.
I do have one real quick.
Go for
it. This is a goofy one.
Right.
I wrote it. It was one from Andrew Jordan, who is always the funniest person ever.
Yes.
He asked a good question that honestly I want to know. He asked, also, he said something else. Also, why do onions never taste as good as they look in the movie Holes?
I've thought about this.
No root fruit has ever looked as delicious as it did when Stanley Yelnats crunched into one of those in that grassy area next to a stream on a mountain. You are absolutely right, Andrew Jordan.
And that dirty water that they get into their jugs and then they're drinking out of it. As a kid, I was always like, how are you drinking that dirty water? And it was just so odd, so strange. They were big onions. They were juicy onions. They weren't crying. Did Shia LaBeouf cry in that scene?
I think he did. And like the thing was that if you ate those onions, the lizards wouldn't bite you because you taste bad. Because
you smell. Yes. And the onions got into your blood. And that's what nobody knew. There's also, can we talk about the when they found the boat upside down in the middle of the desert and there were the peaches mm-hmm. in the boat and they break it open. There's some sharp glass on that jar. Even as a kid, I was watching that scene and I was like, they're going to cut their lips on that jar. That's dangerous. There's a lot of health hazards, believe it or not, in the movie Holes. We've got the warden slapping the children with snake venom painted onto her nails.
That's crazy.
Yeah. You've got the guy, you've got John Voight withholding water from children.
I know. This made me very afraid of the penitentiary system.
It really did.
Of the penal system.
Are there any Camp Green Lakes out there in real life? Are there prison camps for kids like this?
There are.
Really? They're probably worse. Okay. Yeah.
There were.
Not all of them have John Voight, which is just a tragedy.
Have you read the book The Nickel Boys?
The
Nickel Boys by Colson Whitehead. It was a Pulitzer Prize winning novel. It was about an actual camp in Tallahassee, Florida, where they sent boys and they segregated the black boys and the white boys. Whoa. And like they killed young black children and like left them in the woods. Oh yeah. This is a real thing that happened in 1970.
I don't know that much about the legal system, but I do know that you can't just kill people that you don't like.
Ethan, 1970. Yeah. Our parents were old enough to have gone to that camp.
My dad was born in 1967. All right.
So yeah. I need so you like to calm 1970. Down. 1970. It like was in the 1970s. They were in their childhood when this camp was running.
That's true.
Yeah.
Wow. So Camp Green Lake does exist. I'm going to look up right now, instead of doing the rest of this podcast, I'm going to look up John Voight Holes scenes.
Maybe, put on safe search.
Maybe it's not actually John Voight. It looks like him. No, I think it is.
I don't know.
What if it's not? And I've just been saying this the whole time. Oh, yeah, it is. You also have Sigourney Weaver. I don't know how to say her name. Does anyone know?
Sigourney.
Patricia Arquette is in this film.
Patrick Tolles asks, has anyone ever woken up and said, I can't wait to go to Burger King today?
We were talking about this on the phone the other day, me and Pat, and so I think that's why he brought this up. Because I was talking about how I stopped and got some McDonald's, and he was like, oh, yeah, you seem like a McDonald's guy. And that's fair. I am. No shade. But this is the interesting thing. You got your Wendy's people. You got your McDonald's people. You got your Chick-fil-A people. You even got your Taco Bell people.
Well, Phoebe and I are Taco Bell people.
Have you ever met somebody that's like, we got to get something quick, let's go to Burger King?
Yes. Who? And they are the people, that go to Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios Florida. And they are the people that, and they are the people that really liked the Martians TV show that was on. Remember that show?
The Martians TV show.
They really like Cartoon Network, and they watched, what's that Martians show? It's one of those shows that's like in the back of my memory, and I'm like, did this show ever exist?
But Ugly Martians. Really?
That's it. But Ugly Martians.
It's a computer animated television series produced by the British media group Just Entertainment in association with Michael Rose. But Ugly Martians.
Okay, well. They aren't that but ugly.
Yes, I suppose not. So you're saying the average Floridian is a Burger King fan?
Yeah.
Because there's
Burger King is the Florida of restaurants. I understand this.
That's the best way to say it.
Because if you were like, hey, someone found a human toe in a burger at a fast food restaurant,
where would you guess?
You'd be like, no. If you just say a fast food restaurant, you'd be like, was it Burger King? Because I think it was Burger King.
Number one question.
Yeah, Buttigieg Martians. They're saluting in this picture. I don't understand what they're saluting.
And they're saluting you. Martians. They're saluting you, King.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
How about like some real questions?
Yeah. Give me a real one.
Not that those weren't real questions.
No, they were
so
fake.
So, James, our patron James, he said, I'd love to hear some feedback from Patrick on experiencing marriage as a newlywed.
Yes.
Challenges? Surprises?
I would like to hear about this as well. You've been married for what, 6 years now?
Uh-huh, yeah, just about.
Certainly feels like it with this ball and chain wrapped around my leg.
Buddy, that's my wife talking about, okay?
Yeah.
Going to reply to his question because this is like my gut reaction, but I would like to say my gut. So I read this and I was like, honestly, the most surprising thing about marriage is how gosh darn easy it's been.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's like everyone, here's the thing. Based on not that it's like nothing bad has happened or like we've not gotten any fights or like nothing wrong has happened. Like we've been through stressful. Merging finances with another person is very stressful, especially when you're as money-minded as I am. I'm kind of a stickler when it comes. I'm kind of a penny pincher. Anyway, so that's obviously tough, right? Like we're realizing stuff about ourselves we didn't before. But oh my gosh, people made it such a big deal. People are like, oh, you're getting married. Oh my gosh, like you're so young and it's so hard and you got to be real
and it's
careful.
So
and of
marriage.
Course, all of these people are divorced, obviously.
Oh,
and
the average Floridian.
No, just kidding. but like a lot of the advice that I got from people, not all of them, I'm just being mean, but a lot of them are like working out of their own woundedness, right? They're like, I made a bad decision when I was your age getting married. Therefore, you must also be making a bad decision. And so, but I did get a lot of these. Oh my gosh, marriage is going to be so difficult, but it's been great. And like, part of what I've learned is that in order to grow, you have to be okay. Your regular state of mind needs to be, I am okay if I am wrong in this situation.
Yeah.
And like that needs to be something that all of us, and I don't know, it's all of us need to learn this. Like I need to be okay with being wrong. I need to find where I need to grow in this situation. I feel uncomfortable. Why? It's a really important to know yourself. Because then you can not lash out at your spouse. It's very easy to just go, well, you're just being this way, and just kind of dismiss them. Mm-hmm. And like, I feel that temptation in myself sometimes, but it's just, I just have gotten in the habit of being like, that's stupid. Don't do that. That's not going to help anybody. So that's a good question.
Dang. I had a book. I don't have it right with me. I've been reading Introduction to the Devout Life.
And oh, interesting.
There's a section on counsels to married people. Can I just go get it? Can I go get it real quick so I can read it?
Sure, you
it's
can.
It's just in the other room. You can tell. Talk to the people while I'm gone.
No, oh, I don't want to do this. Okay. So I was thinking about this the other day. For those of you guys who were on Twitter and remember back in 2016, Ethan and I were nominated and we won the Catholic Hipster of the Year award. I know, it was a big deal. It was all over the news. And I was thinking about that and I was wondering, do you guys think I should take that off my resume cuz it's like still on there? Hey, welcome back.
You know that 2020 has given me brain worms cuz I ran outside of my room inside my own house and I thought, "Oh, I should have a mask on." It's just terrible. Did you say anything fun while I was gone?
Not really.
Did you miss me?
Yes.
I like this part. It's talking about husbands, which is what you are.
Me. I am. Pick me.
This is Patrick. St. Francis de Sales is writing this to you. He says, therefore, husbands, okay, do you preserve a tender, constant, hearty love for your wives? It was that the wife might be loved heartily and tenderly that woman was taken from the side nearest Adam's heart. This is the part I highlighted. No failings or infirmities, bodily or mental, in your wife should ever excite any kind of dislike in you, but rather a loving, tender compassion, and that because God has made her dependent on you and bound to defer to and obey you, and that while she is meant to be your helpmate, you are her superior and her head. And I just thought that was so good because it is so easy to just like allow the things that a person you're very close to, like allow that to be like, oh gosh, I really wish that they didn't do that.
Yeah.
I really wish that they had some different attribute you know? And that's actually like, you're encouraged as a husband specifically of like, in the moments where Phoebe does something that you don't like or that you wish she didn't do, or is like, oh, she's just acting this way. It's really easy to dismiss it and be like, well, that's just something I don't like about her. And that's like, not, it's not right. It's not what you're supposed to do. You actually have to respond with compassion.
Because oftentimes those things aren't sinful, you know?
Yeah.
It's not wrong. It's just a little annoying. And it's like, you know, or what?
Not even annoying, just different than how you would do it.
Yeah, that's more it. It's not like, it's like, yeah, this is absolutely
It's true. Not like Phoebe's walking around the house like Donkey and Shrek 2 going. And just trying to annoy the crap out of you, you know?
Yeah. It's just she puts hangers on the different way than I do.
It's the stupid stuff like the other that. Way. And you're like, why are you attacking my way of life? You know?
Yeah. Like, that's the gut reaction. But yeah. I have to be honest. Like, I've just, you know, deferred. I've been like, okay. I mean, I have two options here. The only two options are, one, I should flip my hangers around the other way. Or I should just not bother that my closet's asymmetrical. That doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
She's doing laundry. I don't got to do laundry. She can do hangers however way she wants. I'll just go cook dinner, you know?
That's funny. I think it's funny how a lot of people I see recently married, or at least I did in the past, they talk about marriage has been the hardest thing that I've ever done, but it's so rewarding. It's so good. And you're just like, huh? You've been married for three months. What are you talking about?
Yeah. I think that's what they're supposed to say. People like ask me like, oh, you enjoying married life? And I'm like, yeah, it's great. Yeah. They're like, oh, it's tough. It can get tough. And I'm like, yeah, okay, fine, whatever. It's pizza night. So
we're gonna it's pizza night.
It is. I'm making homemade pizza tonight.
That's the question that you always have to, like we were talking about earlier about a different topic of marriage life, but when people ask you those things, just say like, yeah, it's going better than it probably should be, but not as good as I'd like it to be, you know? And just like have these middle of the road answers that like, just don't mean anything. And they're like, oh, cool.
Okay.
All right.
I'll interpret that however I want, I guess.
I'll interpret that so that it reflects my own wounds about my marriage.
yeah,
gotcha. That's funny. I'm glad that it's going well. Do you have any advice for me, a young boy who just recently passed the 9-month mark with my girlfriend?
Communication, baby.
That's funny.
It's called communication, baby.
I can't believe they pulled that out of just all of my words because it sounds.
I can't believe they found it.
It sounds so smarmy when you say it like that. You know?
I know. No, but like in all seriousness, some of the best things that I've ever done is gotten over that insecurity of, should I even bring this up? Because I know this is important. Yeah, just bring it up.
I love it. I love it. Let's do another question. I like this one. This one just got posted 21 minutes ago. So this is in media res as we're recording the podcast. Austin Bostwick, thank you for posting. He says, do you guys have any morning, night, or prayer routines that you could share? Any starting points for integrating prayer into our daily lives? I'll let the man with the office job go first.
Oh, I already talked a bunch, but yeah, okay, cool, I'll go.
Well, I mean, I can go. I'll go. It's fine. You sit this one out. I'll talk about prayer. It's not like you work for the church or anything.
Hey, listen.
My morning and night prayer routines are less than stellar. Let's just be honest here. This morning I woke up and I thought to myself, you know, I should make a morning offering. And instead what I did was is I laid there and like prayed for 30 seconds and then I fell asleep for 20 minutes.
You got to get out of bed.
I know. Who would have thought?
That's like day one.
I can do it. I've done it before. I have good streaks. I've got bad streaks. And I don't think that's necessarily the worst thing in the world. It takes a long time to unravel bad habits. And so,
it's very true.
Yeah, I don't have any high expectations of myself because when I do put those high expectations on myself of, oh, I'm going to make a morning offering every day, my knees are hitting the floor as soon as the alarm goes off, like that always leads to me being depressed and just upset that I'm not holier than I am. And
that's
so,
also really difficult to roll out of your bed and land on your knees.
Yeah, well, my teammate's able to do it. She was talking about how she figured out this way. Because I'm always, when I do kneel, I kneel facing the bed. And I sometimes will fall asleep kneeling in the morning. But Emily's, here, I'll show you. You got the camera up. You can just describe to the audience what's going on. So what?
All right,
Emily
cool, cool.
She goes, she's in the bed. Alarm goes off. Right?
Okay, he's laying down. He's laying down.
Kind of rolls
he's
out,
swiveling his legs over the
down
bed.
Like and, that. And then kneels this way.
So it's like you're rolling over onto your stomach.
Right.
But instead, you just drop. So it's like you're rolling over onto your stomach, but instead you just drop out of your bed onto your knees, like into a burpee.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of like that. And so there's, so I don't know if you could see that, Austin, but.
Yeah, Austin, if you could just roll the tape back.
Roll the tape back, you can watch that. As far as night routine, just this past week, I camped at a monastery this weekend. Which I would have talked about in the intro, but we were goofing on Bob Evans, and so that's fine.
Yeah.
Camped at a monastery this weekend, so I got to go to Compline with a bunch of Benedictine monks, and I was like, I got to start praying night prayer again. And so talked to my roommate and teammate, Sam. I was like, hey, we should pray night prayer together every night. Sam's like, okay. So boom, I got someone built in that wants to do it with me. So it's really great if you have somebody in your life that will pray with you regularly.
And Austin is married, it seems.
Great.
So
you do have a mega built-in person.
You do have a person. A mega built-in person. So I will say, in addition to that, be honest with yourself. I learned that the only time I was like, I want to do a 54-day rosary novena.
Oh yeah, I tried
I
that.
Know that I am not going to wake up 30 minutes earlier than normal because we wake up at 6:30, and I tried pushing it back 5 minutes every day. It's really difficult. And so I just said, you know what? I'm going to give 30 minutes of my commute. I'm going to set aside that time to pray the rosary. I'll do it in the car. And even though you can't, you know, do meditation, closed eyes meditation in the car, it's what I can do. And then in terms of night routine, Phoebe and I make it a point to pray a Hail Mary. We started out just praying a Hail Mary, and then we did what we're thankful for and our petitions, and then we added a few moments of contemplative prayer before that. And so like as we grew, we like added stuff, and we have a night prayer that we do together. And I think that's very important. And one of the things we have to when we're putting our prayer lives together, this is something that the mystics understood very well and we understand very not well, is we have to have a good understanding of the human person and how our minds work and how our bodies work. And our brains send signals to us that it's time to do something when we have habits, right? And so it's hard to start a huge habit. So anyway, there's this thing called like key habits, and essentially every time you do something like floss, you essentially say something to your brain. You say, we are the type of person that flosses. Every time you floss, you're casting a vote. Every time you decide to skip, you're casting a vote for the other thing. Every time you eat healthy, you're like, we are the type of person who eats healthy. Every time you go to the gym, you say, I am the type of person who goes to the gym. So you can't go to the gym and do an hour-long workout every day. Okay, do a workout every day. Do a bodyweight workout every day that takes 5 minutes, and that's a daily habit, and track it, and just say, you know, I am the type of person who at least works out something every day. And so don't try to create your prayer routine from scratch. Start with a key habit that's not a trivial amount of time, but it's not an impossible amount of time. Something you're willing to stick with, and then focus on it for a week or a month, and then reevaluate. Is this making my prayer life better? And then build on it. Because that's the thing we don't realize. Our routines grow. It's taken me 2 years to get to an actual work routine that I'm happy with and that I'm sticking with, you know. And it takes a while to tweak routines and tweak habits and make them something that is actually conducive to what we're seeking in our prayer lives, physical fitness, intellectual life, all of these things, relational life, all these things.
Yeah, I didn't start off one day in college just deciding, oh, I'm going to pray a holy hour every day. And then it's been perfect since then. I started off by deciding, after Seek 2017, my junior year, deciding, you know what? I don't want to waste my time in the library on Reddit in between classes. I'm going to go to the chapel. And so I would literally just, whenever I would have free time during my classes, not every single time, but at least once during the day. I would just go. I pray a rosary, and I didn't really know how to pray the rosary. I did it wrong. Like, I didn't know what to do. I had to look up the mysteries, all that stuff. And I prayed for like 20 minutes, and then I left, and I went to my next class. And that's all I did. I didn't really do any mental prayer. I didn't really do any scripture reading. I didn't really do anything. But it was the beginning of me deciding, I'm going to become the kind of person that goes to the chapel and prays every day. I didn't know that's what I was doing, but that's in effect what happened. And so by the time my senior year comes around and there's a daily adoration hour for the Focus Missionaries, I'm like, oh, well, I could go to that. And so I would go twice a week because I had class, you know, the other 3 days of the week. And then the semester after that, I could go three times a week. And then I wanted at that point to make time on the 2 days a week that I couldn't make it to the hour. And so I was praying almost every day. And then I was starting like, okay, now I'm going to start praying on the weekends. I didn't even really get praying on the weekends down until after my first year with Focus. Because I would just straight up go all Saturday, all day Sunday, hanging out with students, doing whatever, sleeping in, not really praying on the weekends, which is tough.
It's tough, yeah.
It's really tough. Still to this day, I still struggle. Like if you're traveling, it's just hard to, even when you're like within your family, it's my third year with Focus. I'm a team director. It's still really difficult for me to like, take 30 minutes away from my family when I'm home and say, hey, I'm going to go pray. Like that's so hard.
That's why these key habits are so important.
Yeah.
Is because it's something that you can do anywhere at any time. Mm-hmm. I have a key habit for my workout routine. I do 30 squats, 30 pushups, 30 like band pulls. I can't do those everywhere because I don't always have a band,
mm-hmm.
but I can do those anywhere. I did them when I went down to Houston. I did them when I'm, you know, traveling back and you can do them in an airport, right? Same with praying. When Phoebe and I are together, you know, when we were traveling, we went to like three different places during our honeymoon. But every day we knew when we are together about to go to sleep, we do this. We don't need to be in a specific place. We don't need to have a specific amount of time. So like, that's why keystone habits are so important, and we don't recognize their importance in our prayer lives.
Yeah.
We recognize them in other places. We know that we have good habits when we say, okay, I go to my study corner to study.
Mm-hmm. All of this to say is that it's going to take time. If you're starting from ground zero, you don't have to do anything crazy. Like God, this is the other thing too. And maybe you have a really busy work schedule. Maybe you have a really busy family. Maybe you've got five kids and it's just booming at your house and you're like, when am I supposed to have time? God is not going to ask you for an hour if you only have 20 minutes. So you can't put more expectations on yourself than what God would ask of you. God understands your situation. He's very merciful. He knows because he probably put you there on purpose for a reason. And so if you're a student in college and you're taking business classes, then you probably have 30 minutes to an hour every day that you could pray. Probably, if I'm guessing. Some college students listening to this be like, I'm at a very difficult college. I don't have time to pray. You have time to pray. You're the freest you'll ever be in college. If you're a parent and you work a full-time job and you have multiple children, then you probably don't have an hour to pray every day. And that's okay. But you do have something. Everybody has something. God is not going to let your day be so full that you don't have time to be with him, because he's God and he loves you and he wants to be with you. Even if that is the time that you're cutting up potatoes for dinner, that's your 10 minutes where you're talking to God. That's your time, you know? So I think it is creating the habits, but it's also having a mindset that's different of, prayer doesn't have to look like me sitting in the chapel for an hour, silently reading my Bible like a good Christian boy. That doesn't have to be what your prayer life is. So, not very practical, but hopefully some good
That's
techniques
pretty practical,
to help people get started.
So do you want to answer one of the heavier questions?
I suppose.
Or do you want to move on to Dr. Ethan's dating
corner? Dating corner.
Okay, because someone asked a question bumper. About separation of church and state. Someone asked about separation of church and state.
Do you
want to
talk
Trump
about that
Christian.
One? We can talk about that.
I mean, we could do another episode about that.
I didn't read what those Instagram posts were. Did you read them?
I did. What, and also, can when you give did me Instagram the TLDR? Become Twitter?
I don't know.
So the separation of church and state one is about just where that phrase comes from. Mm-hmm. It mentions how Congress, there's two things about religion in the Constitution. Neither of them are separation of church and state.
Mm-hmm.
There's the free exercise of religion clause in the First Amendment, and there's the establishment clause. And it says the government must not establish or promote a religion. Now, abridged it. They took out an article, the article A, as in it's the government must not establish or promote a religion,
mm-hmm.
but they said the government must not establish or promote religion.
Mm.
And those are two different things.
Yes.
Those are two different things.
Those are very different things.
Yes. And oh, what an article can do. And so government must not substantially burden the exercise of religion without a compelling government interest. That's a terrifying little thing. But anyway, so the separation of church and state is kind of this holy grail of some of the founding fathers. Jefferson, Madison loved it a lot. John F. Kennedy once said, you know, as everybody's favorite religious president once said, I believe in an America that goes to the moon by the end of this decade. I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute.
Oh.
Where no Catholic prelate will tell the president how to act.
Yeah.
Sounds like somebody's spiritual director was telling him how to act. And no Protestant minister will tell his parishioners for whom to vote. Where no church or church school is granted any public funds or political preference. And where no man is denied public office merely because his religion differs from the president, who might appoint, etc. So
ask not what apostasy can do for you.
But it's funny because he puts like, I would love an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, and you're like, what? And then he goes, and he's like, where no one can tell the president how to act. It sounds like so childish when you say it like that.
There's only one person that tells the president how to act,
and that's apparently not his wife,
Marilyn Monroe.
Anyway,
we are really going for the boomer audience hard today, because I bet there's kids out there that don't even know. They have no idea.
They have no idea.
All right, kids, sit down. Let me tell you about how the hottest president of all time was a serial philanderer.
Where no, I don't understand why he says where no church or church school is granted any public funds.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
I don't understand that. Yeah. I don't understand how you could be like any public any. I mean, people were going in on the Catholic Church when they found out how much money the Catholic Church in total got from the stimulus package.
Yeah.
It's because the Catholic Church employs people. But people were thinking that, you know, we were just wiring that money to Pope Francis' bank account, you know. Anyway, so yeah, they use John F. Kennedy as their religious scapegoat, since John F. Kennedy was quote unquote publicly religious. Therefore, it's kind of the way that people use, you know, they find a black person that agrees with them, and then they're like, this is my opinion on race because this person said
it. Yeah.
And so that's kind of what they do with John F. Kennedy sometimes. But then they asked us, they wanted to know what we thought about this other Instagram post that was, so you want to talk about Donald Trump and Christianity. And a quote where Eric Trump said that his father literally saved Christianity. I don't have the quote on that. I don't have the source, but yikes.
Yeah.
So we could totally talk about that. I was thinking about this on my drive in about that G.K. Chesterton quote, that's people want to avoid talking about religion and politics, but those are the only two things worth talking about.
Yeah.
And we don't really talk about politics ever. We just talk about religion. But I was thinking that I think the what G.K. Chesterton used, the word that G.K. Chesterton said was not politics the way we think about it. Politics is, I think it's higher than we kind of just use it to mean the different lives of the people that are in office.
But we as in really, you and I, or we as in the American people?
The American people. We use the American people, we use politics to mean just the day-to-day squabbles of the elite in office. But I think politics is polity, the study of how to organize the state. And I think that's a better conversation to have. And I think that's a conversation that we should start having more on The Crunch. What do you guys think? Let us know.
Comment below.
Comment below.
In the patreon.com/thecrunch page. Patreon.com/thecrunch.
Patrons, do your thing. Come into the Patreon page and say, hey, it's a wonderful kind of day. All right, let's go into Dr. Ethan Zane Corner. I'm sorry.
Roll the bumper.
I know it hurts. I'm sorry. All right, You came to the right place, you ding dong. It's called communication, baby.
Hello to the crunchiest of lads. I recently asked a friend on a date.
Yes.
She said the word date had too much romantic pressure behind it and wanted to hang out a few times.
Okay.
And wanted to hang out a few times to see if there was any potential for a relationship, which isn't that a date anyway. We have hung out a few times and it's been going well, but I don't know how long to wait before asking her more clearly to define the intentions and feelings. I don't like having clearly expressed my intention. I'll amend the sentence. I don't like the fact that I have clearly expressed my intentions, gone on quasi dates, and I still don't know how to act or feel because we're just hanging out. The second part of this is that she's Mennonite. I pictured her in a beard. I did. I guess there has to be Mennonite women.
There has to be.
What's the difference? What the complementarity between Mennonite and Womenonite?
Uh huh. Not just the Mennonites, I don't know, but the Womenonites and the Childrenonites too.
I don't know how dating a non-Catholic would go. Any thoughts and jokes are appreciated. Well, good, because we already roasted your person's religion, I guess.
Yeah.
I was in a situation like this once. Would you like to talk about this?
If you want to tell me the story, go ahead.
I was in a situation where I was going on quasi dates. I was in a quasi relationship with someone. It was really strange.
Mm-hmm.
We had both just broken up with our significant others,
Is this the story I'm thinking of?
The Reese's
Pieces. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everybody knows that story. Okay. So okay, everybody good. Loves that story. So I told her ex boyfriend that story. He thought it was hilarious too. Everybody loves that story. So. It was like the week after everything happened, and we were like talking, and I was like, I don't like this because I feel like I am tied to you in some sense, but also I feel like I can't like hang out with other girls because you'll be upset, but also there's no
they call him the old Patrick scared of commitment Nevy.
But it wasn't I was scared of commitment. It was that there was no commitment, but it felt like there was.
Sorry, we can't go on a date until you order an appetizer.
No, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't like I was like, oh, I feel like I'm tied down. You mm-hmm. know? No, it was. I feel like I'm doing something wrong if I ask another girl out, but we're not dating, so what's going on? And so that was an issue, and I eventually just talked to her about it and I said, you know, this is how I feel. I feel like I would be doing something wrong if I asked another girl out, but we're not dating. So I just want to make it clear I don't want to be in a relationship with you. And she was like, oh, okay. And I was like, cool.
What's it called? Communication, baby.
Communication, baby. It saved me a couple times.
I think that's great. I think what happened was that you asked this girl out, and she's like, pa. A boy down at the general store asked me out on a date. What do I do? This young lady, you're not allowed to kiss a man, lest even look at him till you're 27 years of age. And unless he is a member of our blessed community down here at the Mennonite farm.
And also at least a second cousin.
He's got it. I don't know if Mennonites are known for that. Are they?
I don't know.
I don't think we should just slander him like that.
And she goes, I saw a Mennonite. A boy asked me out and just cocks a shotgun and goes, dang, Jezebel, and just shoots through the ceiling.
I saw a Mennonite family at a Cabela's once, and it was a very pleasant experience.
Yeah, there's a ton of Mennonites around here. Yeah. I don't mean to be mean to our
Mennonite listeners.
Our followers of Menish. That's who they worship, right?
He said he wanted to listen to a podcast with me.
Don't let her listen to this podcast. We're being culturally insensitive.
Sorry. Is it really culturally insensitive? Is Mennonite a culture?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Right. More so than like Catholicism, I think. It's very specifically a culture.
Yeah, depends on where you're from. So here's what you got to do. You're going to have to acquire...
Learn how to drive a buggy.
I was going to say, you're going to have to learn how to operate a loom if you're going to... If you're going to invest in a relationship with this woman. First of
all, does she wear the hat? Does she wear the bonnet?
Does she has to wear the bonnet, right?
She gotta wear the bonnet.
She's gotta wear the bonnet. This is like this is every trad guy's dream, because they say that they want a traditional Catholic woman who wears a long dress, but really they just want somebody that never mind. I'm gonna cut that out. Delete.
they want the fruits of the loom, baby.
All right, woo. I got a couple of questions. So here's, I think this is your problem, right? You've agreed to just hang out, and that's fine, right? She might come from a more conservative culture, and it might take her some more time to get to, because dating is a big step, you know? Like for people, it's a lot more serious than maybe just going on casual dates and seeing how it goes, right? To her, this is dating, and so you got to experience that. Maybe what you can do is you come prepared to the next one, right? You say, hey, I really want to take this to the next level. And if she says, you know, I don't know, I still don't want to get to know you. And then you open up the trunk of your car, there's a butter churn in there. And you say, look at what I got for you. Look at what I got. Uh-huh. You say, and then you put her hand on it, and then you put your hand over hers. You say, look what I got for us.
And then you walk over to the field, and you pull a big rope, and you raise a barn.
You raise a barn together.
Yeah.
I think there's so many things that you can do. You know,
you take off your trench coat, and you have like suspenders and black pants and like a rolled up white shirt that they wear, you know, when they're raising barns, and you have a hat on.
You say,
you look,
go ahead.
I don't know. Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you want to,
I bought a buckle hat, baby.
Got a buckle hat. You dress in the whole garb, right? You're dressed in the whole,
all of it, whole
to
nine.
The nines. You say, hey, I want to take you on a date. She's like, I don't know. I said, no. We're not going to dinner. We're not going out. We're not going to the clubs. We're not even going bowling.
We're not using anything that was invented after 1800.
Babe, I want to fetch water with you.
Wow, that's a little bit much.
I know. It's a bit fast.
That's a bit fast.
But I think it'd be good.
You open the trunk of your car and you pull out one of those like yolks for pails of water.
I think it's perfect. I think... Could you, what's a Mennonite girl name? Does she have a name? Did it come in that email?
Clements.
Clements? Clemencia.
Clements? Clementia? Clementine.
Clementine. Nope. Clementine's good.
Susanna.
Clement.
Deborah. I'm trying to think of Old Testament names.
Clementine, Susanna. I've had such a good time.
All I can think of is Mennonite men names, and they all start with J.
Yeah.
Jeremiah. Yeah. Joachim.
Susanna Clementine, I just want you to know that I bought this buckle hat and I legally changed my name to Jeroboam. And
Jeroboam.
And I think it's fine. I think it's finally time that you showed me your father's sawmill. I think it's fine. I want to, and no, that's not a euphemism, Susanna Clementine. That is, I want you to show me what your father does for a living, and I want to see him cut lumber and use it to construct buildings, and that's the life I want to live with you in this community. And I want to
not use electronic banking or indoor plumbing.
what I really would like to
we're
get
confusing
rid of,
the Mennonites with the Amish. You know that, right?
I do.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Do,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What I would really like to get rid of is Venmo, and I see a relationship with you as a perfect path to achieve that end.
You know, Venmo is actually an anagram of Mennonite.
Is that true?
No, it's not. Okay.
Can we, let's just real quick, men know nights, just to make sure that this is all accurate, because
I'm pretty sure they're the guys with the hats.
They do have hats.
And long beards, but no mustaches.
Oh, so the Mennonites, they're not prohibited to use motorized vehicles. So they don't have to have a buggy. You can bring your Toyota Corolla to the Mennonite camp and you'll be fine. They're also allowed to use electricity and telephones in their homes.
Wow.
So this is probably how you called her to set up the date. I was thinking like you wrote her a letter and said, I'd like to take you on a date. And then she wrote back, that's moving
you
a little
had to
fast
find
it.
You had to find a pigeon carrier that's still open. You know, like, oh, man, never can find a pigeon carrier this late of an hour.
I think
Mennonites all over the place.
Yeah, I think this is a great opportunity for you, Jeroboam. I don't think you should let it by. I'll send you a Facebook link with some butter churn that you could maybe pick one up. They're like $50. It's not that bad.
Here's a picture of the Mennonites. It's strange because it's a picture of all the Mennonite children, and all the boys and all of the girls are standing it's for a picture, but there's like a good 3 feet distance between the set of boys and the set of girls.
Yeah. Was this before coronavirus or after coronavirus?
This is after coronavirus. Whoa. Or before coronaviris, I'm sure.
I think it's
well,
great.
That's the best part about not using any technology after 1800. You also can't get the coronavirus because that was made after 1800. It's novel.
Understandable. All right, then. I think. All right. I don't want to do any more. I can't. Is this a quick one? I got to get going. I have a meeting at 3 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time.
Uh-oh. wait a second. That's now.
Yeah, it was 12 minutes ago.
Oh, okay. I'm always... Will a Catholic man... This is from Will Bonderer on Reddit.
All right,
he
cool,
took
cool.
it from Reddit. Will a Catholic with will Catholic men date a woman who eats in bed? I am always snacking in bed. I combat crumbs on the daily. I'm not just talking about chips and cookies. I eat full meals on my bed.
I get a napkin and I tuck it into my collar.
I'm wondering how Catholic men will feel about this. Is this something I should disclose in pre-Cana to a future Catholic spouse?
Oh my
is
gosh.
Eating in bed a sin?
You're kidding.
Then someone commented, I think carrots and celery are fine. Chips and cookies are venial. Fried chicken and steak is mortal. Go to hell, straight to hell. Do not pass purgatory. Do not collect $200.
Question. Do Catholic men want to date women who use the water from their waterbed as a drink in the middle of the night?
Do Catholic men want to date a Catholic woman who invented a device that is both a straw and a puncture so that I can drink directly from my waterbed in the middle of the night?
I don't understand. I don't understand. I assume this is probably a bit.
That's a joke. That's a joke.
I assume
yeah,
it has to be a joke. But can you imagine? Do I bring this up in pre-Cana? Gosh.
Yes.
Anyway, that's funny. I love that exists. Patrick, this is a great episode. This is good mm-hmm. to podcast with you. I always enjoy our time together.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you were going to maybe say that you liked podcasting with me, you appreciate me, my friendship, what I've done for you and your family.
I was going to say that, but then I was like kind of embarrassed because I was like, oh no, what if he doesn't feel the same way? But then I was like, oh wait, you just said so. So
maybe I'll say something anyway.
Maybe I'll say it. I like podcasting with you too, I guess.
Don't tell my mom that I said that.
Hey, Ethan, can you ask your mom to ask my mom if I can sleep over tonight?
Can you,
Mrs. Nevy? Can you call my mom? Because you know, if you called your mom, it'd be bad news.
Yeah.
But if you get their mom to call, and it's like I'm in the clear. No responsibilities. I'm going to keep playing GameCube. I'm going to keep playing Star Fox Assault up on the Nintendo GameCube.
Can you ask your mom to ask my mom if I can stay over and keep playing Super Smash Bros. Melee on your GameCube?
My friend would get so mad at me because I would beat him in Super Smash Bros. Melee because he owned the game and I didn't. And he'd be like, you're just using the items. And it's like, you're the one with items on, bro.
Yeah, you can turn those off. And also, they're part of the game, okay?
All right.
If you can't use them, turn them off. If you're one of those people that only plays Kirby Smash Down B, you don't deserve to win.
That's no fun. I do typically play with items.
Sean,
off. I do play with items off when I play, but you know.
Me too.
I haven't played in a long time. All right. Anyway, patreon.com/thecrunch. Good podcast. We like to do comedy around here. We like to be Orthodox. We love the Catholic Church. We're getting an imprimatur. I don't care what anybody says.
Especially not the Pope. We're going to be completely in line with the church teaching. I don't care what any of them say.
All right. Patrick, do you have anything else for the people?
I do not. It is pizza night, so I gotta go.
Thank you all for listening. Please pray for us. We'll be praying for you, and we will see you all next week.